Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Red Ice Radio. I'm your host, Henrik Palmgren. The website is redice.tv. Always a pleasure to be able to speak to you and, of course, have a perspective voice that is counter to the mainstream narrative in the times that we are in, definitely. As my mom always said, actually, only dead fish flow downstream. And if there's anything we do here, it is working our way upstream and fighting against the current. Well, our guest today is Carl Lundström with us on Red Ice Radio. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Carl. It's great to have you here.
Okay.
Very good. All right. So one of the things I wanted to talk, well, many things actually I want to ask you about and talk with you about, but just a little bit of background. Maybe we can talk about that in the beginning if you don't mind. You're one of the heirs to Wasabröd, which is, for those who don't know, is a Swedish company that was started in 1919 by your grandfather, Carl Edvard Lundström. It's actually the largest producer of the Scandinavian type of crisp bread that we have, you know, up in the Nordic countries. I think later in the early 80s, it was sold to Sandoz, the Swiss company. But since then, you have been, you know, you founded, you financed a number of companies, you know, like Swedish Telecom, you know, internet and co-location provider Rikstelecom, for example. You've also been involved, and this is something I'm going to get into detail later. You've been involved in politics on the right in Sweden, like the Swedish Progress Party that later merged with the Sweden Democrats, which I believe actually today is one of the larger parties in Sweden. You helped the National Democrats, for example. But you've also, you know, took part in like opposition groups within, for example, the Swedish Taxpayers Association to try to get them to actually address the question of immigration in relation to taxes and things like this. And I would say, Carl, sadly, but also thankfully, of course, you're one of the few business people in Sweden that have actually taken a favorable, you know, stance towards Swedish nationalism. You've been outspoken about this. You've showed your support in various ways. And, of course, this is a major concern for many, you know, people in Sweden today. But what do you think people should know about you in terms of your involvement with some of the nationalist parties? There's a lot of rumors that goes around online in terms of your involvement, and people are always afraid of people, you know, on the right that is kind of supportive in one way or another of nationalist, you know, politics. How deeply involved have you been?
Well, in some periods, very full time in Framsteg, in the Progress Party, before, up until the election 91. That was a full time engagement. And, but otherwise, party politics hasn't been my thing, really. I've never since the Progress Party in the early 90s. I haven't been elected to anything or been a candidate for anything at all.
So you have had nothing to do with like the involvement when they merged into, for example, the Sweden Democrats. That's not a area. You
no, no, I was out of it long before then. I when Ian Wachtmeister came up. I actually thought that he was better than we were, which is why I sort of ended my work for our own party, because I didn't see that there was a place for our party when he had started.
And that, for those who don't know, it was called New Democracy or New Democracy in Sweden. And that was, when was that, Carl? Was that like in mid-90s they popped up, early 90s?
Oh, yeah. I don't know exactly. It wasn't in 91. In 91, we got about 1%. And then I think it was in the next election that he came up. Or if it was the same, I'm not sure.
Right. And they weren't around for too long, to be honest, either.
No, unfortunately, they were split up by a group around Bert Karlsson, the asylum entrepreneur that we all know about.
Unfortunately, yeah. Exactly. All right. Well, we'll get into, you know, a little bit more about the scene, if you will, of nationalism in Sweden, what is happening overall with immigration. I'd love to get your, you know, take on this as we, you know, talk about a concern that we both share in terms of where Sweden is going in regards to this question. But let's talk, if you don't mind, a bit about the Pirate Bay first. I mean, this, you're probably in these circles, perhaps, well, not only in the national circuit, but even the alternative media, you're known to a lot of people for actually have helped the Pirate Bay in the beginning to get started. You were one of the four co or defendants actually in the Pirate Bay trial that took place in Stockholm. And just a quick recap for those who don't know, I mean, it's in 2009 there was a district court in Stockholm that actually found all four of you, and you being one of them, guilty and sentenced to some prison time jointly. I think they were asking like 30 million Swedish crowns or something like that in damages. Yes. And then the verdict was appealed, and there was a kind of a partial success, I guess. The sentence was reduced to 4 months, and some of the fines were actually increased at that time, though. But tell us about your involvement and how instrumental you were in the early days.
Well, I met Fredrik Ney, who actually was the one of the two pirates. It was Gottfrid Svartholm and Fredrik Ney. And Gottfrid had started the service in Mexico, where he lived and worked at the time. It was growing, and they couldn't afford the bandwidth, server capacity, and all other costs associated with the site, with that enormous traffic that was growing all the time. So Fredrik approached me and suggested that I and my telecom company would host them and offer them this bandwidth and the services they needed, the servers they needed, for free, providing that they, later on, when they would be able to sell advertisements and generate income, that they would stay with us and not skid away to the cheapest supplier. This deal I agreed to, and it was also upheld by the two guys. And after a couple of years, the Pirate Bay was our single biggest customer.
One of the things that people should know, which has been a positive sign in Sweden, I'd say, is one of the internet service providers, PRQ, right, that came out of this. And it actually has been kind of a very staunch supporter of free speech and freedom of expression, right?
I'm not sure if PRQ came out of that, but PRQ was Gottfrid's company, and we hosted them too, of course, so they had one or two racks in our facility. They also had their own facility, and they're still around. I don't know who owns them now.
Right, okay. So what do you think about the sentencing overall in terms of, you know, what Sweden has tried to do? I don't know if you, I think you actually did serve some prison time. No, you actually were confined to your home. Wasn't that right?
No, I did serve prison time. That was my own fault, because when you're confined to your home, then you're not allowed to drink a beer.
Oh, really?
Which I decided to do anyway.
All right.
And as a result of that, I was sent to a high security prison.
You're kidding. So for because of a beer?
Maybe because of the copyright infringement. But having had no alcohol or drug problems, or no criminal or violence or anything in my registry, except for traffic violations, page up and page down of traffic violations, the judge started laughing when he read them out. So there was no reason at all to put me in a high security prison, but they decided to do that anyway, which and I since you don't have a lot to do in prison, I wrote to them and asked why, and they answered that the criminal board sees no reason to change its decision. That was the answer. But I'm happy they did that, because that was very interesting. You sitting with murderers and also drug addicts and violent robbers, and that's an interesting experience. And most of my preconceptions were confirmed, and some not.
All right.
And it was boring, but it was very interesting. And 2 months was about that was about enough.
Yeah, I can imagine that. That's very interesting, because I remember I covered this. This is over a couple of years ago now, I believe, but it was about the Svartholm, Gottfried Svartholm trial. He was actually imprisoned in Denmark for a little bit. And I know that it felt like the whole thing was very clearly to kind of make an example out of all of you. I felt that there was a punishment in that regard. And I don't know what your take on this is, but I felt that it must have been related to international pressure, maybe from the American, you know, angle, the Hollywood establishment and these kinds of things. I don't know if you can confirm those suspicions or not, if you think that Sweden kind of acted independently, if you will, on this case.
No, independently must be the wrong word. I mean, the prosecutor, Mr. Rosvall, traveled to United States for instructions on how Sweden should act. And he came back, and then he in turn obviously instructed the lawmakers. They changed the law to make the Pirate Bay illegal, which it wasn't, of course, when we started it. And so that would be far-fetched to call that an independent act of Sweden.
Yeah, exactly.
Then the verdict is that's another story.
What's your take on it now in hindsight? Was it worth it? Do you feel that the Pirate Bay have kind of, I don't know, filled an important role in some regard, or was this more kind of like a fun project for you? Or what did you feel your incentives were for your involvement in this?
Well, as I said before, why I liked the Pirate Bay from the beginning and wanted to help them is because I heard on the radio once several years before that the United States and France was in a quarrel about the French resistance against American popular culture in the mass media in France. And then the Americans had said to the French that this is one of our absolute biggest export products. You can't just restrict that. Then I came to think, well, obviously that is one of our largest import products then, if you can call it a product. And that must mean that there is an enormous flow of funds from Swedish working class people to the richest and most powerful corporations in the United States, who have an enormous influence and also a extremely unsympathetic agenda, in my view, with the warmongering that they're constantly doing. And I found that the less money that is flowing from my employees and my friends to them, the better. Then, of course, some of my friends are musicians who complain that you're taking our livelihood away and so on. Yeah, but that, the livelihood of Swedish musicians that might then be reduced is not the big thing in this. The big thing is that a warmongering conglomerate of people who mix into the politics and put a rudder on the politics in the world's most strongest and most aggressive military power, that is something that is a bigger problem. Therefore, that's why I really wanted to help these guys. And also, they're fun, and I like them as persons, these two guys.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I always saw, and it was just kind of a suspicion, and I've spoken with other people about it, you know, kind of one of the reasons maybe why something like the Pirate Bay was started, and I always felt that to a certain extent it was kind of part of a culture war of sorts, in a roundabout way fighting back. It's interesting that you mentioned what you mentioned, because obviously this has helped to maybe I don't know, weakened, if you will, then to a certain extent, maybe the cultural influence, as you say, of America overall, everything that comes out of Hollywood, basically, right? That this has financially maybe helped to cripple them to a certain extent. Was that part of your thinking in any way when you got involved?
I didn't think farther than what I just said, and I don't think that the Pirate Bay has made any impact at all on developments. No. We know that Hollywood themselves put films and music and stuff on the Pirate Bay, and large software companies like they make their products reasonably easy to crack, and all this is because they want to distribute it. They want to spread it stuff. And they see other their sources of income is not threatened to any extent that so no, I don't think we've had any particular impact at all. No.
All right, very interesting. Now, if we just for a moment speak about the sentencing or the continuation of this, if you have any comments, and I know that Sweden have of course tried to go after you financially, right? And I don't know if you've come to the point of basically being, bankrupt because of this, because of the fines that they have kind of wanted from you. But what can you say about that in terms of how Sweden have basically tried to take money back? And where would that money go? Would this be handed over to some of the plaintiffs in the cases, or what's the deal there?
Well, it's not really Sweden that has gone after it. It's the conglomerate of plaintiffs who are running who wants the money, and they hired a very expensive and famous solicitor in Zurich to influence the bankruptcy judge in order to try to discredit me and find something wrong with what I had done, to no avail at all. So it's not Sweden, it's this big companies, but I presume they have given up now.
Okay, so there's nothing there. They're kind of trying to get you on. I think the fines, if you will, or the payment was increased to like 76 million Swedish crowns due to fines and fees and everything else. But has that, as far as you know them, this is, they haven't tried to claim this from you or the others?
Yes, they claimed it, but I filed for personal bankruptcy in order, because it was totally impossible for me to pay all of that money.
Right,
and
right.
I didn't really have the ambition to try either. So they got, I had on my Swiss tax account, I had stupidly paid in advance a little bit too much, and that was confiscated. And then I had account with some shares at Nordnet, the Swedish stockbroker, which they took. And they got some. They got some money.
All right. Well, this is an interesting case. It's a very interesting case. Do you feel, kind of a final question on this issue before we move on, but do you feel that they in regard have also maybe tried to make an example out of you because of the fact that you have been politically involved? I mean, we know how incredibly repressive the Swedish environment overall. I mean, it's mostly the same overall of Europe right now, unfortunately, in most countries, in Western Europe at least. But it's a very nationalistic establishment and an elite that we have in power. Was there anything like that that was involved in the Pirate Bay kind of the legal issue, do you think?
I don't think so, no. I didn't see any signs of that. Even the big newspapers in Sweden were sort of sympathetic to my case and found it astonishing that I was convicted and things like that. So I got space in Expressen to make my statement. So I know I don't feel that I've been discriminated or anything like that for political reasons, no.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, I guess. That's really good to know. Well, let's talk a bit about Swedish politics and how you view the situation today in Sweden. I want to get into, you know, how you see the future, but also maybe we can begin to talk about how you have seen Sweden change over the last, well, I don't know, 30 years maybe, if we go back a little bit. I mean, there's been an incredible transformation of our country, and this is frankly something that is such a deep concern to me that I think about it all the time. I'm worried about it. I have literally nightmares about the future of our country. Tell us about, give us a little bit on your perspective on this and how you see what has happened to Sweden and the political system overall. I mean, on the immigration question specifically, as far as I'm concerned, at this point, they are replacing us with a foreign population. The immigration policy in Sweden is one of the most absurd and radical and out of this world, if you will, in any country. Per capita, we've been getting more immigrants even than Germany, which is a very, very extreme country. How do you view this?
Well, I think you should view it in the international terms, because Sweden is not the only country which is trying to commit suicide this way. And Sweden is a country where the political culture is very weak. The politicians are extremely subservient to foreign powers, and Sweden has simply been faster to adapt and to adopt, and more wholeheartedly. The politicians have more wholeheartedly adopted something that was asked of them from somewhere else. Where, I don't really know, but I can't see it as a coincidence that chaos is instigated time after time after time in the Middle East by United States and their allies, and then the results are the resulting wave of immigrants and refugees are always being sent up to Europe. The Swedes have done an extremely bad job of counteracting this, but it's something that has to be seen in a larger perspective, I think.
Yeah, that is true. We don't actually hear much about attempting to stop the conflicts, for example, in Syria, that is ongoing, which is one of the kind of the reasons why, of course, many people are fleeing from that. We know that they're not, of course, only Syrians. They come from Afghanistan, they come from Iraq, they come from other, you know, Libya, North African countries, and other African countries. So many are piggybacking on the Syrian war, of course. But
yes, I'm probably minority.
Exactly, but at this stage, you don't hear too much, as far as I'm concerned, about it anyway, a rhetoric from the Swedish politicians, which is we have to try to stop the conflict and make sure that the root of the problem is taken care of. It's almost like that they're seeing their ability to bring in immigrants as a kind of a virtuous statement of sorts. So they almost see it as a positive thing, if you see what I'm getting at.
Yes, it's quite sickening to listen to them. Therefore, I don't listen to them. I don't read what they say or listen to it. I just stay out of that television. We never had one at home. I'm afraid you have to speak about them with somebody else.
Yeah, I know the political system is a disaster in Sweden. That's for sure. But
there's nothing wrong with the system or the laws. It's the people.
Okay. Yeah. No. Of course. That's true. I mean, it worked at some point, and then all of a sudden it doesn't work. Or even the laws and the rules are not upheld. We're seeing the same things in America, for example, with illegal immigration. Right. That all of a sudden the laws that were there in place to make sure that people come in the legal way seems to just have vanished, and no one is upholding it. I mean, look at Greece, for example, right? I mean, at some point, Greece had a functioning border, and there wasn't the steady stream of people coming into the various Grecian islands and then moving further up to Europe, you know, to Northern Europe. So something has changed, right? Something has transformed where they almost are encouraged today to come to Europe, right?
Yeah, but it's all but legal. I mean, they are whining and threatening boycotts of Hungary for following the law, for following the decisions about the EU outer borders and enforcing the laws that were decided. And they're complaining and they're calling Hungary names for doing their job. And it has no foundation at all. What they're doing, especially not a legal foundation. It's treason and sabotage and lots of words you can use for this. But people should understand that these people are these politicians and the media that they subjugate to are they behave like some form of authorities, and they sound very authoritarian, but they are the criminals. They are breaking the law all the time.
Yeah, it's a good
breaking
point.
Their own laws.
Right, exactly. They're not upholding them. What can you say about maybe, I don't know if you have been a lonely voice, if you will, within the business world or of other Swedish businessmen or European businessmen. I don't hear many people speak out against what is happening. Why do you think maybe you have been one of the... Maybe there are others. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I know of, at least, that there aren't more that are, for example, supportive of nationalist causes or of those parties or even of the emerging new media that's trying to kind of counter this cultural war, if you will, the information war that's going on. Why do you think that you're one of very few? Why aren't there more like you, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. No, no. Of course, there's logical reasons for that. I mean, when you're running your company, even if you own it, you have an obligation to your employees and your shareholders and so on. And therefore, there is some moral. Shall we say, you don't really have a right to let your political opinions hurt your company, and so to some extent, some people who keep quiet are doing. I can understand them. Then, of course, there are scumbags who go out in favor of the politicians, obviously just for their own personal for some reasons. I mean, the larger a company is, the more politician-like, the more of politician blood is in the arteries and the veins of the management. They seem to become more or less politicians when they get to a certain level, and that is despicable, I think.
Yeah, it's almost like they don't want to ruffle any feathers. If they do, that could potentially cause them, you know, losses economically, so to speak. So they end up following along in the current framework of the moral or the moral framework, I should say, of the times, right? So it's very maybe difficult for business people and companies to take a stand in any regard. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I was saying initially, the last point was that there are politician-like large company executives who lack the moral to say no when political powers ask them to stand up for treacherous policies, which they very well know will hurt their employees.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's extremely worrying. Let's go back to the point where we didn't really finish that, but in terms of how you've seen Sweden change over the last, you know, 30 years or so, what do you think has been one of the, you mentioned some influence, or maybe that it's other people that are, you know, proposing these ideas, because one of the things that we need to address here is the fact that the Swedish people have never gotten a chance to vote on this issue or decide or help to kind of make sure if they wanted to see their own country being transformed in this way. What do you think would happen if they had a vote on this issue and asked the Swedish people, hey, by the way, what do you think about immigration, or should we continue the policy as is? What do you think the results would be?
Yeah, it would be very... the immigration would, of course, be stopped. The question would be how much to do in order to change the increasing the proportion of Swedes in Sweden instead of decreasing it. There's nothing static in the world, so either the proportion of Swedes in Sweden is increasing or is decreasing, and the whole debate will be how much and how to increase the proportion of Swedes in Sweden. If this would be democratically decided, yes.
Yeah, because we have an issue, of course, of birth rates. I would say, though, Carl, that they've been giving us different answers when people have been inquiring, right? At some points we've heard, well, you know, we're not having enough children in Sweden, therefore we need to import people that can do the jobs, etc. We need to have an increase in the population. But then the other day, the next day, it's, no, we're doing this to help these people. But the fact is that the job market is very sparse today in Sweden. There's very few jobs. Many of the people that do come in, they don't end up having a job. And, you know, they can spend decades of not being kind of brought into the Swedish workforce. So I feel that all of these are different kind of excuses, that we're getting different excuses so that the same procedures can just continue year after year. What's your take?
Yes, the arguments for immigration are fantastically contradictory, and all what is said in the mainstream media is only always concludes with the same result, that we should keep on changing, replacing the people. So it's not interesting to listen to them. I mean, the only thing you find out when you listen to one of them is, what does he think that he will have to say today in order to serve the purpose of his masters, who obviously wants to eradicate the Swedish people. So it's his various verbal maneuvers of politicians. I mean, it's not interesting, for me at least.
So, what do you think the issue is here? Is there a lack of resistance, a lack of people concerned with this speaking out and kind of taking a stance and actually starting to talk about this? We know, I have to mention, of course, to the international audience as well, that there's a little bit of a difference in terms of culture here, in terms of the fact that Swedes are generally more more laid back about these issues. They don't get vocal. It's a very conformist environment, we should say, which has been to a certain extent maybe detrimental in this case, because we keep quiet longer, I would say, maybe than what other people would do. But is it a cultural problem? Is it we, Carl, that would have to change and begin to kind of break some of these kind of ways that we have gone about things, that we keep quiet too long? We should speak out. We should start organizing and start voicing our concerns more. What do you think we should do?
Yes, I agree. Of course, it's a maturity process. The Swedish speaking population in Finland is still about as naive as the Swedes here on the mainland were 10 years back. They still think that these people, we have to feel sorry for them, and they are fleeing from war and the torture and blah blah blah, which were the attitudes 10 years back. In Sweden, we have come past that now. Nowhere, even the mainstream, except that they are a problem, and the fact that they are here is a problem. So it's a maturity process, and that, which is a maturity process, which is important and necessary. Then, on the question of what must be done, the Swedes are also maturing very much in that many people have realized that politics won't help. politics is actually secondary, because politicians, they are concerned with other politicians. They want to prepare for various alliances, and they want to speak in ways which can result in the maneuvering into more power and or remaining in power, or remaining in the parliament, or enlarging your position. And these, the attitudes that obviously are very difficult to change among politicians of all colors, they lead to very much suboptimization for practical results. They speak among themselves, and the civil society outside, we also have to speak among ourselves. We have to speak to asylum fraudsters and tell them that you are not welcome. I think the example from Gotland recently, where after a disgusting rape case, about a couple of hundred people assembled, and they marched not to the police station, not to the civic center, or to the politicians to hold up signs or shout things. They marched straight to the home, the asylum center of where the perpetrators were. They short-circuited the system. They didn't speak to the politicians. They know that those people are useless, and that's a dead end. They went directly to the asylum center, where of course the police met up. But I think that was very encouraging. More people have to, more Swedes have to short circuit the system and stop asking them each other why the politicians don't understand, why the journalists are so fanatic, or why these other Swedes are such traitors. Doesn't matter. It's our problem. We are 7 million people. We should be able to do something ourselves. That is a very important development for the future, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, what happened in Gotland is a good example. There's cases, unfortunately, like this way too often, way too many times. But we had basically for those who don't know, it's a woman in a wheelchair that was gang raped. And the, of course, initiative by the local authorities and the police, etc., has been scandalous in the sense that they let these people go. There's been no prosecutions. There's been nothing. And effectively, it's almost like that the people themselves have been forced to take actions into their own hands, as you say, to try to do something about this, to try to at least show the discontent. And what we've seen on the flip side, too, Carl, from the media, has, of course, been that it's these people that are the problem. The people that are showing their anger against the system, they are the problem, right? They are the Nazis, they are the racists, they are the bigots, the haters, etc., without even addressing the fact that we have a woman in a wheelchair who you would think would be an extremely, how do I phrase this, she would be on the victim hierarchy, she would be pretty high up, right? She would be venerated by our system, right? But it isn't. They just don't care about that anymore. It's astonishing to me.
It's interesting, because I mean we should study them in what they do, and they react extremely stingy to what the people of Gotland did, and they sent nobody knows how many, but special policemen to Gotland. Some sources say it's 62 of them who came over in order to see if they could chase down any people who would do any more protests and harass them, and this really hurt this little march that these 100 people did. Another example is this Soldier of Odin movement, which also is, of course, a way of short-circuiting the system, and where media has stopped writing about how feared and terrible and violent the soldiers are. They only write about them when they get beat up, which happens very seldom. Which means that they are very concerned. The media is very concerned with the violence and the potential for violence. Of course, soldiers are not at all violent. They stop violence, but that merely that is a very great priority for a clique who wants to rule the country against the will of the people. All oppression ends and finally with violence, and violence is extremely important for them. Enough said of that.
All right. Well, that's an interesting point, Carl. And there's much more I want to get into here in terms of the media, what we can do basically in this fight. I mean, I think you've been involved in Fria Tider, Free Times is another kind of emerging paper in Sweden. I think they're primarily online. I don't think they have a paper version yet. There's also New Times or Nya Tider. There's a lot of these papers that are starting to show up, which is a good sign. They're countering this narrative, as you said, because in terms of the soldiers of Odin, they don't want to, of course, never show all the good things that they do and the fact that they have maybe some influence here and there, or they manage to change perceptions or basically helping people out. They're in a position of need, right? So they're positioning themselves, the media is positioning themselves as a clear enemy of the people. And we have a situation now where basically the media environment, they will go down together with the politicians as we kind of begin to tip the scales. And this is something I'm going to talk more about, you know, in the second segment with you. So there's more to go into and discuss there. But I don't know if there's any, you know, before we wrap up the first segment here, is there any, I don't know, websites, any projects that you're involved in that you'd like to plug to our audience, if it's personal websites or if there's anything else that you want to relay people to further if they want to check out some of your other involvements and works right now?
I'm working with some friends on a web radio system which is meant to compete with the state radio, and especially with the channel P4, which is music, just three songs and then news and then some form of information and then three songs. So it mixes music and talk in a pleasant manner 24/7. And I'm looking for partners who wish to produce content that would fit in that sort of system, which is difficult because most of you guys prefer to speak for hours, and most people don't want to listen to you for hours.
Well, our audience wants to.
but there will be more about that later. We haven't decided what the name would be given.
Okay. Well, it's a good initiative. It's actually a good point because we also not only need to, you know, slam people with information, we need to replace entertainment too, that is true, but the general media environment that people find themselves in, and as you say, they might just enjoy it because of the fact that they play music, right? But then in between they get the cultural Marxist dose of news, or they get the interpretation from the authoritarian perspective, whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
So if you could mix that up and change that out, that's a very good, you know, good strategy. I don't know if there's a way that people can get a hold of you if you have Twitter or Facebook or anything like that?
Yes, I have both, I only have Facebook, my email address is very simple. It's Carl with a C at Lundstrom.com.
Very good. We'll have the link up to that for people so they can get a hold of you. But yeah, let's just kind of take a short pause here, and then we'll continue more with the second segment, folks. Much more is coming up with Carl Lundstrom. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Tune into the second hour of this show at redicemembers.com. We have a video version of this show available both hours. And of course, as usual, MP3 files for download or streaming. Or as a podcast version, we have RSS feeds with all past shows in them. Sign up for a membership with us. We have videos, live TV show archive, Red Ice Radio, Radio 314, thousands of hours of material waiting for you on the members' website. So do support us, make us go further, and cover more. And as usual, don't miss our live TV show this Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern. That's 11 p.m. Central European time. We have more coming after this. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you on the other side of this break.